Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a chance, please check us out at consumerguide.com. That's consumerguide.com. All our new car reviews are there. Our 2026 Best Buy picks are there. And you can stream back episodes of the podcast right there on the homepage. It's really convenient, although you should just subscribe and download them someplace better. More convenient.
Of course.
Of course. That voice is Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed. Paul is sitting in for Jill this week. Jill got a last-minute invitation to CES.
Yeah.
And as of my last text message, she still doesn't know what it's about.
Yes, I saw her post, too. She was asking for, like, advice of what to do, which I found kind of funny.
So she's there at the request of a manufacturer. They obviously have some stuff to talk about. So Here's a hint. I think it's Chinese.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting.
Yes.
All right. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year. Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
This is episode 308, but it's episode 1 of the new year.
Yes. But you don't mark your episodes that way, though.
No, we just run them.
Just keep going.
Yeah, no seasons. There's a thing there that used to upset Damon Bell, one of our first co-hosts, that I didn't want to do seasons.
Yeah.
No. That feels like added complication. Like if there's seasons, we should do things to mark the seasons.
I know. Anything complicated, you don't like. I get it.
So how are you doing? You guys have a new podcast, a relatively new podcast.
Yes.
I've caught maybe half the episodes now. It's very good. Tell us about your podcast.
Well, we started a podcast, WeAreMotorDriven.com. Or sorry, We Are Motor Driven Podcast, which you can find on WeAreMotorDriven.com and all your streaming services. So basically, it's Harvey from Rides and Drives, mm-hmm. Jennifer from Auto Exotica and The Median, and then me and Brendan from Sons of Speed. We kind of got together and started our own podcast.
And it's about an hour long.
Yeah.
And it's just conversation.
Yep.
And it's good. It's smart conversation.
Yeah. We're not really picking, like, we're not doing, like, news, although we do cover some things like that. But we're trying to make it where it's just four car enthusiasts talking.
And it's kind of single topic.
Yes.
The last episode I listened to was your predictions episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to do our own predictions today.
Okay.
So glad you're here. Later in the show, Tim Healy of The Truth About Cars joins us. He's going to be in on that conversation. Tim has never been in studio before.
Ah.
I don't know if he knows about the donuts.
Well, he's going to find out soon enough.
What predictions did you guys come up with, just very generally?
For
anything. Like, anything?
Like, you caught me off guard.
Oh, that's all right.
So like, of a new model or, like, something that's going to happen?
Trends, sales, okay. Electric cars.
Haptic touch steering wheels are going away.
Thank God.
Everyone's dropping them. Volkswagen's dropping them. Even Ferrari's dropping them. So those are going away.
For people who don't know what that is, tell us what that is.
Instead of having, like, solid buttons, you had, like, a little touch, like a little feather touch sensor on the steering wheel. And when you pressed it, you got, like, a little vibration from it to kind of give you that, that sensation that you did activate something.
That you did something.
Yeah. And and people absolutely hated it. And
I number myself among them.
Yes. And finally, manufacturers, you know, they invest a lot of money into it, so they just can't drop it. But, you know, through the model years and model changes, they're pretty much all gone now.
It's funny how slowly the auto industry can respond to things like that. But they also have contracts.
Yes.
You know, they have suppliers are going to have to pay. And if they kill demand for that, they might have to pay for 4 years of no production.
Exactly. And in typical Ferrari fashion, though, you can always upgrade your steering. If you have haptic steering wheel, you can upgrade to the new solid one, probably for, I don't know, $15,000. But at least they give you that option.
Which is about the price of an oil change. So I remember the scandal when the Ferrari Enzo came out. And it was special oil. And I think an oil change at the time was $800. And people were scandalized. And I bet you that's typical now.
$800?
Yeah.
That's like cheap. It's like $3,000 or more.
My daughter just handed me a receipt for an oil change on her car. It was $82. She went to Northwest Oiler right here on Northwest Highway outside of our office here. And that's just what an oil change costs now because everything's synthetic.
Synthetic, yeah.
Basically doubles the price of an oil change.
Yes. And the promise was that you could go a lot longer between oil changes. So now it's like between 7,500 and 10,000 miles, but they are making it back up in the price.
Yeah, they are. Years ago, when Tim Healy, our guest, when he and I worked together, we had a long-term Jaguar S-Type.
I did not know you two worked together.
We did. Yep,
oh, wow.
Yep. Long time ago. And this car was with us for a year, and it was a mid-size sedan. I don't know if people remember the S-Type. Very retro styling. But we were all freaked out by the first oil change interval, which was 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
I worked at a gas station as a kid. I changed
people's oil. It was 3,000.
It was 3,000.
Yeah, like religiously. Everyone, 3,000 miles.
And then limousine drivers, those guys were crazy. They did 2,000 miles, which is what cops do, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, 10,000?
Yeah, but that's kind of the norm now, so.
Oh, man. So we're waiting for sales numbers. We don't have those yet, but it's looking like 2025 was going to be a fairly normal year sales-wise in the new post-COVID normal sense.
Okay.
Which is weird given how crazy 2025 was. But the weird thing that has happened, and this is kind of bumming me out, is what we're seeing, which may affect sales in 2026, is that base models are disappearing.
Okay.
And I don't know if you saw this, and I just did the math on it, and of course, I forgot it and my phone, but the Toyota Highlander, okay. Very popular car.
Yes.
Very good car.
Yes.
Very good crossover. Available in two-row and then three-row Grand Highlander.
Yes.
Because the sales have been pulled away from the Highlander, there's no longer a base LE model.
Okay.
You can only get an XLE.
Okay.
Which effectively raises the entry price of that car by $4,000.
Oh, wow. That's significant.
And that's happening in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I'm going to talk about this car in a moment, the Nissan Kicks.
Okay.
Which is built in Mexico. And you think that they might be subject to some price stress.
Yes.
They didn't really raise their prices for 2026.
Okay.
A few hundred bucks.
Okay.
So, anyway, this might make you sad.
All right.
The car that was called the Fisker Karma.
Okay.
Which was later the Karma Rivero.
Rivero, yes.
And we don't have time to get into the history of this car, but it was a beautiful car.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yes, I heard.
It's gone. Yeah, that car lingered way too long. You would remember this. The Fisker Karma came out almost exactly the same time as the Tesla Model S.
Yes.
And they were both kind of rakish sedans, and mm-hmm. they were both challenging new technology. One of those did better than the other.
I wonder which one. But no, the Karma, when it came out back then, was actually a little bit more of like a sports car
mm-hmm.
version. The Tesla is more of, well, I mean, the very first Tesla came out was based off the Lotus, but then the Model S,
yeah.
The Model S was actually a Tesla produced car that was, you know, instantly family sedan. So that was the big difference between the two at the time.
It was weird to watch that car happen. And we have Tesla today because of that car.
Yeah.
I mean, that was truly, love or hate Tesla, the Tesla Model S was proof of concept.
Yes, absolutely.
People would buy the car.
Yeah.
People would buy charging stations for their
houses.
And
they would spend the money because it wasn't cheap.
No, it was very expensive. And they got to, what, like 140, 160 grand at one point where there was like the Plaid edition.
The Plaid edition, yeah.
And super expensive.
Yeah.
And people paid that money. And then Tesla went to volume.
Yep.
With the Model 3 and the Model Y.
Yeah.
Which are really the only thing they're selling right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, the Model Y is our number one seller.
So, interesting thing about sales numbers. I don't know if you've been watching this or if you love monthly sales numbers as much as I used to. But GM, Ford, Stellantis, and Tesla do not provide monthly sales anymore.
Oh, really?
So it's really hard to know what's going on
yeah.
until you get to a quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is big. This is a big deal. Like, what the sales? Has anyone seen sales numbers come out yet today?
No.
Yeah, they're going to be delayed a little bit, I think, because of the holiday.
Okay.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where these things play.
Is there a strategic reason why they're doing that now?
Yes, I believe. So if you go back to when I was in high school, you know, the 20s, manufacturers used to actually report on a 10-day basis.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which was stupid.
That was.
It was frankly stupid because you had a different number of weekend days.
Yeah.
in each 10-day period. And if a holiday came up, it just blew that out of the water.
Yeah.
So monthly made a lot more sense. But one of the reasons they got away from 10-day, and I believe it's the reason they got away from monthly, is you don't really want the stock market responding to relatively weird one-off events and things like that.
Yeah.
So if you're quarterly, everything just evens
Especially with all the recalls and stuff.
Yeah. So here's a story about that. Gravity, the Lucid gravity.
Okay.
People might know Lucid. They make the Lucid Air, which is beautiful. And that just drove
it. Electric, yeah.
Man, that's a good car.
Yeah.
That is a nice car. I don't fit in it, which is a super bummer. The doors are too small.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but that's a Tom problem.
Okay.
Everyone else is going to love this car. But they just came out with a midsize crossover called the Gravity.
Yeah.
By all accounts, a very good vehicle. They had really difficult time getting that thing out the door. I don't know what the deal is, but that was misunderstood to be a problem selling the car. It was a problem building the car.
Okay.
And I think that if markets responded to their sales numbers, if they were official sales numbers, the stock would have tanked.
Okay.
Because everything hinges on this thing doing well.
Sure. So by waiting to the quarter, they can kind of soften the blow.
Yeah. And it turns out in the last quarter, they kind of rebounded.
Okay.
Gravity's selling a little bit better.
Yeah.
And they that thing's expensive. So if that can bring
all
in
Lucid
some,
products are expensive.
They are. They have a mid. They have a smaller chassis coming, and hopefully that'll do something.
Yeah.
But every time you turn around, you hear Lucid's borrowing some more money from Grandpa, which is the Saudi wealth fund that owns most of Lucid.
Okay.
So to what extent the Saudi wealth fund is willing to let them die?
Who knows?
Yeah. But they keep giving them money.
Yeah. See, Rivian's. Their next models will be more mainstream.
Yes.
I guess Lucid hasn't figured that out yet.
So. No, not really. Not really. The Lucid Air, their single product, starts around $80,000 and goes up to $250,000.
Yeah, with a Sapphire.
What the Sapphire? What the hell?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And
but it's fast.
What is it? Is it 1,300 horsepower?
Yeah, something like that. 0-60 in like 1.99 or something.
Whatever that is. Whatever that is. You know what? Whenever I hear a 0-60 time like that for an electric vehicle, I think about some of my favorite videos on YouTube, which is Mustangs leaving car shows and getting sideways on the road. And then ultimately ending up in a ditch.
Yeah.
And like,
or in the opposite direction.
Yeah. And that was just acceleration.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's wrong with Mustangs that you should hit the gas that hard.
Live axle, rear wheel drive.
Yeah.
So.
But I think that before I hit the gas really hard on an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And I only had the 600 horsepower version of the Lucid. And that was ridiculously fast.
It is. It's a quick car, yeah.
It's good stuff. I wanted to ask you this. It's completely off topic, but do you ever visit dealership websites?
Yes.
Okay. How irritated are you by the pop-up bot?
Yes. Like right away, some very attractive woman. Hey, would you have any questions that I could answer for you? You know, a photo of.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to schedule service or, you know, something like that. No. You know, so, but it happens on all of them.
It does.
Yeah.
And my problem with the bot is not that it exists. It's that it was so poorly implemented. It pops up. You can't figure out how to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And it covers up a third of the screen.
Yes.
So you can't actually see what you're looking for.
Yeah. It's like the Microsoft paperclip. Windows paperclip, whatever it was.
Was that Clippy?
Clippy, yeah. You can't get rid of it.
I never once actually had Clippy help me with anything. I don't want to be a whiner about that, but I never got good advice.
Okay.
But yes, that's my problem with those bots. And it seems like they were just slammed into place. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of manufacturers, Subaru specifically that I remember from recently, provide their dealers with more or less cookie cutter websites.
Yeah.
So they're almost all about the same for a particular brand or manufacturer. But they're all just slapping in this damn bot randomly, it seems.
Yeah.
It pops up. And then if you say anything, it wants your name and number. You're trying to kill it and you want it to move. Yeah, it's terrible.
And the other thing is there are always like some obscure 800 number phone number if you want to call. Like you just, like it's a local number. It's down the street. And like you just can't find, when you Google it, you can't find their number. Like they want you to use their, their core, like some outside number so then they can record everything.
Yeah, and that is probably provided by the manufacturer as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And they probably use that for research and market research and stuff. All right, really quick, I wanted to talk about a car I just drove.
Okay.
All right, and I liked it a lot. The 2026 Nissan Kicks.
Okay.
So this vehicle was redesigned last year. It's Nissan's most affordable crossover, their smallest crossover, although it is not that small anymore.
Yeah, it's grown.
It's grown a lot for 2025. Picked up a little more power, and by little, I mean...
Yeah, a couple horsepower.
And that's kind of the only problem with that car. I just went car shopping with my daughter, and that was one of the vehicles that we test drove. And she was very impressed by the interior and the equipment level for the money. Here's the interesting thing. For 2026, this was a 2026 model I just drove, you can load the crap up out of this thing.
Which means expense.
It gets more expensive. You don't have to spend that money on it.
Yeah.
The most expensive trim level starts at 28 grand, but the vehicle I drove was 36 grand.
Wow.
So you could...
That's pretty significant for entry-level vehicle.
It's a big bump, and you get stuff for that, and I'm wondering... I would love to know the take rate on all the stuff. Because for one thing, you can now add all-wheel drive.
Okay.
Bargain at $1,500.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Do it, because you're going to get your money back at resale time.
Yeah.
So just do it. There's this big equipment package that includes the big sunroof, and for a while, you had to get the big package to get heated seats, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to get it to get a heated steering wheel. But that package is kind of worth it because it's just a lot of luxury stuff. But then, willy-nilly, there's like puddle lights, ambient lighting, all this other stuff you can add.
Yeah.
And it all adds up.
It all adds up, yep. And it's not really necessary. I mean, it's nice. It's just nice. Not necessary.
So just in a nutshell, this is a fantastic small vehicle if you're not looking for the power. It rides, it handles well. It's got really good room up front, pretty good room in back if you're not behind somebody tall. Nicely finished inside, feels nicely screwed together. I got 30 miles per gallon.
Okay.
There's no extra power, unfortunately. It's normally aspirated 2-liter engine.
So when you hit the gas, you kind of have to wait.
Yeah, it's kind of geared for around town.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just sticking around town and driving under 30 miles an hour, you're going to love this car.
Yeah.
But if you're going to try to pass someone at 60 miles an hour,
you need to calculate.
Yeah, you need that, a rosary, you know. it's not there. But what a nice car otherwise. Ultimately, I think you know this, my daughter went with the CX-30, the Mazda CX-30.
Yes.
Very similar in terms of offering luxury stuff in an entry-level vehicle. Way more power.
Yeah, yeah. And a little bit more drivability, I would say. Handling. Yeah.
It's definitely sportier.
Yeah.
Yeah, where the Nissan kind of looks sporty, this really is sporty.
Yeah.
So, all righty then. We're going to go to a break in a moment, and then we're going to talk to Tim. But what do you guys have coming up on the podcast?
Good question. when we get together, we record like a bunch of them at once, and it's just so hard to get four people all together.
I imagine.
Yeah, especially when two live in Wisconsin. So,
and you guys do gather in the same room.
Yes, because we've tried the Zoom thing and it's just talking on top of each other. Like it just, you know, so it's much better to be in all in the room together.
We did the podcast via Zoom during COVID.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Yeah.
I mean, the quality of the show fell.
Yeah.
I was constantly stepping on other people's feet. I do that anyway.
So can you imagine when you're not in the room with them?
Yeah, I'm a crazy rude host. So yeah, it was really bad.
So, but we plan on getting together soon now that we're in the new year, and we'll record, you know, four or five more.
Well, I've been enjoying the podcast. Tell people how they can listen to it.
All your major streaming sites, Apple and all of anywhere you get your podcast, you can find us.
Excellent. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Tim Healy, managing editor at The Truth About Cars. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, and he is Paul. Paul, thank you for sitting in this week.
You're welcome.
So first show of the year.
Yes, first show of the year.
You guys already jumped in.
Yes, and I want to give a lovely shout out to my lovely wife, Agnes, who is listening live for the first time.
Hello, Agnes. I've met your lovely wife. She was there New Year's Eve, the Midwest Automotive Media Association.
Holiday party. Yes.
Where I had fried potato things.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were. They were good.
That was amazing food. Loved it. It was great night.
Good party. I don't get out much anymore, so it was good to see people.
Yes. And to be amongst our fellow journalists was great.
I've lamented this before, and I'm sure this is true of virtually any career, you know, path, whatever people do. Hanging around with people that do what you do is how you learn.
Yes.
Really.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can read stuff as it's printed, but people know things.
Yeah.
And they talk about things and things they wouldn't say out loud.
Yeah.
Especially if you get a couple
drinks in them, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
With an open bar, you learn things.
Yeah, and speaking of drinks, Tom, are you on social media?
Yes, and only when I'm drunk. I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter X and on Blue Sky.
Okay.
Thanks for asking.
Absolutely. Anytime.
So, in studio with us for the first time, Tim Healy, managing editor of at The Truth About Cars. And as you noted before, you didn't know, Tim and I worked together a long time ago.
Yeah.
We were at Consumer Guide way back when.
Okay.
Tim was a really young man then, and I was a younger man.
Okay.
In those days. But yeah, we used to do fun things like have long-term vehicles, stuff like that. And anyway, Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for making the time to visit.
Thanks for having me.
You've been on before. But you haven't been in studio,
no,
I think.
That's right. I was on about a year or so ago, give or take.
All right. Help yourself to a donut. I'm opening the donuts.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see what you got. Let's see what you got.
Okay. We have... Oh, okay.
Oh.
Double chocolate cake, and
it looks like
peanut
chocolate
butter.
Cake. Oh, peanut butter.
Oh,
okay.
Peanut butter. Okay.
Yeah. So, someone has to take a picture for me. I forgot my phone.
Okay. We'll take care of that.
All right. I'll go ahead and I'll text this to you in just a minute here.
Sounds good. Anyway, Tim, tell us a little bit about the Truth About Cars.
Yeah, so The Truth About Cars, we are part of a larger group, a company called Vertical Scope. And what we do, our niche is sort of car enthusiast, industry nerds, like dealer employees, manufacturer employees, people who like driving cars fast, people who like having fun with cars, people who pay attention to cars closely. So we work with autoguide.com, which is more of a consumer-focused site.
Sure.
And then that's kind of we belong to the same parent company, but we are separate. We are more of an enthusiast and industry-driven site.
Gotcha. So what kind of content do you guys put up?
News, so sales numbers. We'll have a few things tomorrow on sales numbers. If there's a new model launch, CEO says something crazy. Car reviews, of course. We have a podcast of our own, which we launch every Friday afternoon throughout the year. So, again, a lot of industry enthusiast content. Some features as well. We have a rare rides feature. One of our writers kind of focuses on the history of the industry. He's been working on Cadillac for the past 6 months or a year. And we have another gentleman who does junkyard finds every Monday, where he goes to local junkyards.
That's fun. I've seen that. Finds cool cars.
So we have a lot of some classic car stuff as well. A little bit of racing stuff, not a ton, but a tiny bit of that as well.
It's good that you're hitting the classic stuff too. Just because I have noticed in the last 10 years, I think that the number of true enthusiasts has dropped a little bit, but there are people casually interested in cars, but they're not as well informed as they once were.
Yeah.
And I worry that, like Cadillac, for example, people don't know what LaSalle was.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. It was such an important thing, and it got Cadillac through the Depression, and the cars were freaking beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff like happened that. And then the General Motors companion brands are crazy. People don't know that there used to be a brand called Marquette that was sold through Buick dealers, or a brand called Viking that was sold through
Olsen. Gosh, I don't even know that.
It's crazy.
Nor did I.
It was all part of the General Motors ladder.
You know,
the Alfred Sloan.
Unfortunately, the generation of kids today just don't seem to care about cars like us.
No, you know what else I don't care about is brands.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation a couple times in the last few weeks when I was being interviewed on other shows, and the question is, are Americans ready to buy Chinese cars?
And I don't think so.
Okay, well, the interesting point, 20 years ago or so, there was a survey that came out, and the average American at the time, and I assume it was someone in a position to buy a car, that was the respondent, they were expecting a discount of up to 35% off the price of the vehicle were it Chinese,
yeah,
for them to consider it. I don't know what it is now, but I get the sense that people are more open to it than they were.
Okay. I mean, they're going to be discounted off of other brands. However, the tariffs are going to bring that right back up.
That's a really good point.
Number one. Number two, like you said, at what point of a discount are people looking for to make that transition?
Yeah, the other part about that, too, is I think you guys probably saw this BYD outsold Tesla mm-hmm. in 2025. And that's Tesla's second year in a row with down sales. So Tesla's getting beaten up a little bit.
But the Chinese market is a different market than our market.
It is. And BYD did, though they are international, they did most of their sales in China.
Yeah.
And what they sell is very affordable cars that don't go very far.
Yeah.
Like 100 miles, 150 miles. 200 is kind of a big number for them.
Mm-hmm.
So those numbers, those vehicles would either have to be discounted or pitched very specifically to potential buyers who have less expectation of range.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But anyway, so Tim, we're going to talk about 2026. Crazy. 2025 was crazy. 2026 promises to be kind of crazy too. Any big predictions you have?
I think it'll be a lot of status quo. Car prices are going to continue to increase. I also believe that there will be a short kind of fallback in EV adoption, given the removal of the tax credit and changes that have happened with fuel economy regulations. But at some point, probably in the latter half of the year, I think with EV range getting a lot better, I think we'll start seeing more EV sales pick up slowly, a percentage or two, not a huge dramatic increase.
There's some interesting stuff that came in here. I wrote them down, but I should probably remember them. The Leaf, the Bolt, the CHR from Toyota, and I'm forgetting another vehicle that came in. But these are going to be much cheaper vehicles, and I think they're important to the future of EVs in the country because without the $7,500 tax credit, affordability becomes an issue.
Yes.
But all these vehicles are looking to come in around $28,000 for the Bolt to like $35,000 with range going up to 300 miles. And this might be the new sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. And have you guys driven the Leaf?
I have. And the Leaf is, it's much better than the previous generation. It's more fun to drive. It's still not a sports car.
No.
But it's a good commuter car. It looks less weird than the previous generation.
I have said this on the show. It looks less like a shoe now.
Yes. And I think, if I remember correctly, it also now has NACS charging, the North American charging standard. So you don't have to look for a CHAdeMO, which are hard to find anymore. So you have more charging options, which is going to be huge, especially if you're a first-time EV owner.
If you've ever been to a charging station and wondered what the second plug is for, the second cable, it's for nothing. It's the CHAdeMO thing that fit a few Nissan Leafs and a couple of Mitsubishi products over the years, and they never were used.
Yeah.
And what was super irritating to me is that the station near my house would say that it was working when it wasn't working because the CHAdeMO side was working.
Oh, God.
Like, how does this help me?
It doesn't help anybody unless you own an old Nissan Leaf.
Yeah, it doesn't help you or a Mitsubishi iMEV.
Yeah, exactly. There's a house somewhere in the North Shore that has two of those iMEVs parked in the driveway whenever I pass by it.
Wow.
Yeah, that person must be a glutton for punishment.
We had one of those. Were you at Consumer Guide when we had a long-term EV?
I don't believe I was still with you, but I definitely have driven them, and they are weird.
I would say dreadful.
Yeah, I was trying to be nice.
But they were really small, really cramped. I really didn't fit in that vehicle. But they were slow.
Yeah,
I remember how slow they were. Yeah. I never understood why electric cars were ever slow because they didn't need to be slow.
No, you have instant torque.
Yeah, you could just throw a bigger motor in there. And the strange thing is, as we're learning from cars that are 1,600 horsepower, it's not that hard to get a lot of horsepower into an electric vehicle.
No, it's not.
All right, I got to throw this out to you guys, and you guys talked about it in your most recent podcast, or the one I listened to, about your predictions. And I exhale with exhaustion. But the Hemi engine is back.
Yes.
And for people who don't know, the Hemi was killed for 2025 and replaced by a spectacular engine called the Hurricane at Ram. And it's an inline six-cylinder engine, twin turbo, direct injection, slick.
Very smooth.
Everything about that engine was good. And Ram buyers would not buy it.
Yes.
Ram sales went into the tank.
This is a big sticking point with you, Tom, I know. Just like Apple CarPlay is with Jill. You and this engine, it's a big sticking point for you.
I just drove the 2026 Ram with the Hemi engine.
Okay.
And it's great, right? The Hemi engine is a good truck engine.
Yeah.
And now, as if they're rubbing our noses into what the Hemi was, it comes standard with what used to be an available cat-back exhaust system for the Hemi engine. That's now standard.
Okay.
So it's noisy as heck
as well. Yeah, because that's what people want.
That's what people want. Yeah. I wish they didn't want that.
I just saw an ad this morning for the TRX, now is going to be 777 horsepower versus the 702 original. So that thing is going to be just a rocket.
I think Ram's plan can be summed up in three words. Well, I can't say one of them on the air, but America, F, yeah. You know, I think that's what they're going with this.
That is exactly the marketing plan. There's actually a manila folder somewhere.
With a big America.
Yeah.
F, yeah, on the cover.
I mean, it works. It's a good motor. The whole Hemi lineup, those were good motors. The supercharged version that was in the old TRX was very good.
I see where you're going with this. So you're trying to say the Hemi is very good, but the Hurricane is better and more fuel efficient and better for the environment.
I kind of like moving forward.
Yeah.
And that six-cylinder engine, the Hurricane six-cylinder engine, is what, 420 horsepower or 540 horsepower?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember. I think 540 for the high output or for the super high outputs, 540 or 520, something like that.
It was a bunch of horsepower. And for a small engine, the torque was immediate.
Yeah.
And it was smooth and the fuel economy was better.
But it doesn't sound like a V8.
I wish we weren't turning our backs on it. Now, here's the craziest part of this. If you pick up a Ram now and you want the Hemi engine, it's $29.95 extra. Mm-hmm. $3,000 to get less horsepower.
Worth it.
Heck yeah.
I don't understand it. I think the towing numbers are about the same, too. So I don't think you're picking up anything in towing either, which would be the one logical reason for a truck buyer to spend $3,000 for fewer horsepower.
And the Ram marketing folks completely nailed it. They have that badge of protest that's on the side of the thing.
A lot of truck drivers, you know, they look at the V8 as not just the stronger engine, even though it might not be, but as the longevity engine, like... Well, I can pull my stuff and, you know, and have the V8 and it's going to last me 20 years, you know, versus the V6, which is going to, you know, be more susceptible to wear and tear.
But are they keeping their truck 20 years?
At the prices they are now, they probably will, but.
Maybe. And to your point, Paul, that could be the case. We don't know that the Hurricane has any longevity.
No, I'm not saying that at all, but I'm just it, you know, perception is the market. You can sit here and talk to your boo in the face. If people are convinced that the V8's better, guess what?
Yeah, you're just stuck. The giant irony here is that the diesel engine, the Cummins diesel in the big Rams, is a 6.
Yeah. But diesel gets treated differently.
That's true.
And diesel's torquier. You don't need as many cylinders to get as much torque.
Yeah.
So I got an electric car question for you guys then. General Motors was doing pretty well selling EVs last year. Mm-hmm. Not as well as they wanted, and they didn't end up opening that Orion plant to build the Sierra and the Silverado EVs. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. So they're building most everything at what do they call it, Factory Zero, the old Hamtramck plant in Detroit. But they do have that thing humming. And here's a question. General Motors has so many EVs compared to other makers, like relative to their volume. There's the GMC Hummer. There's two versions of that. The GMC Sierra, the Chevrolet Bolt, the Equinox, the Blazer, the Silverado, and the Cadillac Optiq, Lyriq, Vistiq, Celestiq, and Escalade. Do these things stick around now without...
Certain models will and certain models won't. I know that's kind of a cop-out,
The market is going to dictate what stays and what goes, period.
I mean, Cadillac is really all in on EVs.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. And they actually killed their small gas vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, some of the XT4 and
XT4, I think, was their compact crossover.
Yeah, those are gone. Replaced by EVs, oddly enough. But if if they sell, they'll keep them. If they don't sell, they won't.
What do you think, though? Will they sell?
That's the larger question.
That's the big question.
Again, some models will and some won't. I don't mean it to be a cop-out, but I think with EVs, weird for the sake of weird doesn't necessarily play. But I think when you drive an EV that has at least 275 miles, probably 300 miles of range, and is close to what people are used to with a gas vehicle, that's why I like the Hyundai IONIQ 6 so much and the IONIQ 9, because their designs are not that weird. And the IONIQ 6 is a little weird, but... They feel
in a good way, though.
Yeah, in a good way. But they feel like gas cars. They've got long. They've got fairly long range, at least at the top end, top trims. Some of the EVs that General Motors has are a little more weird, though, and those I don't know if they're going to do as well. I actually drove here in a Lyriq, and it's
okay.
It's fine. It feels more like a station wagon than a crossover, but that's not really an EV problem. That's just a size problem, right? So, but the range, that's only 285 miles. That seems a little low for, it's not super low. There's, but you think it'd be a little bit better. So I don't know. It's all going to come down to use case design. I think, you know, Blazer EV has a better shot of making it than the Celestique or the Vistique or whatever, I think. And the naming part is weird part of it too.
Yeah. The naming's a problem. It's so funny because when companies that aren't BMW or Mercedes start messing around with alphanumerics, mm-hmm. they always get it wrong.
Yeah.
And like Cadillac, it's just like, do you remember the X, was it the XTS that replaced the, I think that was the...
Well, yeah, that was a mistake. The ATS, CTS, XTS, and the XT4, XT5, yeah. no one was ever able to follow that.
Nope. It was, life was so much easier when BMW was just 3, 5, and 7.
Yeah, or Lexus with just 350, 450 for engine size. Yeah.
But when you ask people about Cadillac models, what's the one that sticks out in everyone's head? The real word, Escalade,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? The ones that have these like weird spellings and stuff, people don't remember.
No.
I had the Escalade IQ, and it was still the short wheelbase. It was a 2026, but I don't think they have the long wheelbase out yet on the IQL. But I had this when it was really cold out, and it was delivered to my house with a 90% charge, and the range readout read 504 miles.
That, yeah.
And you're like, this is good EV.
This is good EV, yeah.
Like, this is good. And that whole vehicle is spectacular.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with that vehicle.
Brendan and I love that car.
Yeah, once you get past the price, and kind of the size, it's difficult to park,
yeah.
basically. It's actually good handling.
Yeah.
What a spectacular vehicle. It was $136,000 or something.
Yeah,
I took one of the
cheap.
Cheapest versions
yeah.
of the vehicle. But blindingly fast. And that range turned out to be legit.
Mm-hmm.
It got cold, really, really cold after I got that vehicle. And I still managed to squeeze what I estimate to be 460 miles out of it. So, and it's super fast charging. Like everything about that vehicle is just darn spectacular. That's the EV experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of surprised that's not selling better, but I understand it's not selling well.
It's got to be the price.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
That price is crazy talk. You've driven Escalade IQ?
No, I don't believe I've driven an EV Escalade yet.
Okay.
I think only the gas engines.
I just drove it. I actually put out a word that I needed to drive more General Motors EVs, and then they just all showed up. Like, all right, I got to ask more. And I've got the Lyriq coming. Are you driving the V?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got that coming then.
Yeah.
So that's, for people who don't know, the V is the performance version of those vehicles.
Yeah, I did put it into V mode on an off-ramp. It doesn't make a huge difference. It's more of a, more of a crossover family kind of hauler, upscale.
Does it, like, suspension-wise, does it do other things besides?
You can set it in the dash. I haven't played with it.
Oh, okay.
You can change the modes. It didn't feel, and I didn't play at the setup, so maybe it's the way the previous driver had it set up.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel particularly engaging. I'd rather have a CTS-V than this. Yeah.
Yeah, I miss the old CTS-V.
Yeah. Well, the black ones are still around.
Hard to believe that there was once a CTS-V wagon with a manual transmission.
Oh, the automotive journalist stream car?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember a gentleman by the name of Dan Johnston?
I do, yeah.
He was our Volvo rep. And he was a great guy. But I remember talking to him once about how it'd be great if one of the wagons was available with stick. And he goes, yeah, you. And he named a journalist, and I wish I could remember who it was, because it was a brand name journalist that people might have heard of. But he was looking for an all-wheel drive wagon and manual transmission. I forgot what else there
I
was
drove
there.
That, the CTS-V, back when they had it in the fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of the worst fuel economy vehicles ever, never tested.
Do you drive the TRX?
I did the last TRX, and that was also
that was like
on that list.
4 miles to the gallon.
I think I managed 9 on the freeway.
But you know, if you want an example of why automakers should never listen to journalists, the ID Buzz.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you and I talked about this when you were a guest on our podcast. That vehicle, it should be so much better than it is. And it is fun to drive, and the space is amazing. It's packaged really well. But it's sold so terribly, they're skipping a model year, at least in North America.
Yeah, or they're not skipping a model year. We've seen the last of it.
It's possible, yeah. We don't know. We only know what we know officially so far is they're skipping 2026 in North America.
There were three things in my book. There were three things wrong with that vehicle. It cost too much. It didn't have enough range. And then there wasn't enough space aft of the third row. And I think that if you
I would agree with all three of those things,
yeah. Too.
And I think that if you fixed the price or the range, just one of them, that vehicle would have sold a lot better.
Yeah, the range was shockingly low for such a large vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, was it 230, 231 miles, something like that?
Something like
yeah.
that. And the whole marketing scheme of that is, you go to the campsite and go camping with this thing. Okay, well, where am I going to charge it? You need at least 250 on that, probably 300.
You know, 300 minimum.
I think 300, yeah. And then the other, the range, the space doesn't seem like a big deal, but if you were actually trying to use this like a minivan and take five or six people to go camping, you couldn't.
Yeah.
You couldn't put five or six people in there and their stuff.
I noticed that getting groceries. I live alone and trying to put groceries in it without moving the third row. I mean, I had space. I had enough room, but it was tighter than it should have been.
Every other minivan, no, they're not electric, but every other minivan has that deep, deep well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After the third, you can get a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Well, we have burned through our allotted time for this segment, guys, but tell us about the truth about cars and how people can check it out.
Yeah, so you can go online and find us at ttac.com. That is TTAC.com. You can also spell it all out, thetruthaboutcars.com. Either way, and we have new content just about every day, Monday through Friday. And again, our podcast goes live right around midday every Friday.
It's good stuff. People should check it out. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Quiz time. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. He is Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed. And with us is Tim Healy of The Truth About Cars. Thank you for joining us, guys. Real quick, tell me some social media stuff.
WeAreMotorDriven.com.
All right.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's get to the quiz because we got a lot to talk about after the quiz.
Yes, you've got a list of cars that are leaving us.
Yes.
That's always a big deal. I didn't think about it, so thanks for compiling that.
Yep.
It's kind of a sad list.
It kind of is.
All right, it's quiz time. This is quiz number 308. That's not actually right. This is just the
300. Yeah, sometimes you don't have quizzes.
Yep. But this is perfect. 50 years ago, I need you guys to tell me the best sellers of 1976.
Oh, jeez. I was 6 years old.
I'm going to guess...
You can guess out loud, but yeah. I've got a full quiz here.
Yeah, he's got the full quiz.
Okay, so we can guess out loud, though, right?
If you want to, just go ahead and guess the best-selling car of 19.
I'm going to say Cadillac Eldorado.
No. All right. All right, let's start here. So I'm just going to give you two cars. You have to tell me which one sold better in 1976. Okay. Tim, you're our guest. You get to go first.
Okay.
Which sold better, 1976, the Chevrolet Malibu or the Oldsmobile Cutlass?
That's tough. I want to say a Malibu because it was probably cheaper, and the Cutlass was next level up luxury-wise, so I'm going to go with Malibu.
Paul?
I'm just going to be different. I'll say Cutlass.
It was the Cutlass by a lot.
Oh, really?
Here's the deal. The Malibu was new for that. That replaced the Chevelle.
Okay.
Although I think Malibu was a trim level on the Chevelle. But the Cutlass was a bunch of vehicles, including the Cutlass Supreme, which was unbelievably popular, especially here in Chicago. So Cutlass Supreme, 515,000 units. God, manufacturers wish things were like that.
I was going to say, that they don't see those numbers anymore.
No, and the Malibu, 325. But the Malibu would get more popular.
Eventually, yeah.
Yep. All right, Tim, you're on the board. You have 1 point.
No, I think I do.
Yeah, oh, you have one. I'm sorry. Paul, Tim, Paul has 1 point.
I'll take his point.
All right. I'm very bad at hosting the quiz here. Paul, which sold better in 1976, the Chevrolet Impala Caprice or the Ford LTD?
What was the first one?
The Impala Caprice.
Yeah, that one.
That's or the LTD. You're going Impala?
Yes.
Sir?
Do fleets count?
Yes.
Okay. In that case, the LTD.
No, it was the Impala by a huge margin, 470,000.
I remember
units.
That. Even though I was a little kid, I remember that.
I don't know my 70s very well. I was going to say LTD because I thought more cops bought
LTD. LTD was 362,000, which is still a gigantic number of cars. Paul is winning with two. All right, back to you, Tim. Which sold better in 1976, the Chevrolet Nova or the brand new Plymouth Volare?
I'm going to say the Nova.
Yeah, if it was brand new, I'm going to go with the Nova as well.
Yeah, by a lot. Not a lot, but a good number. 334,000 Novas, just 295 Volares. Do you remember the Volare song?
When you hum it, I'll know it, but I don't know
if I'm going to hum it. All right, you both got a point. But the Volare replaced the Valiant and the Scamp and all those vehicles. It was all new. Also, they should never have replaced those vehicles because the Volare and then the Dodge Aspen, which was its analog over at Dodge, were crappy, unreliable nightmares. Like, they did not get that right.
But that was before K-cars, right?
Comfortably before. The K-car kicked in for 81.
81, okay, yeah.
Yep. I always said 82, and then one day Sam texted me during the show.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Our good friend Sam Fiorani. Happy New Year, Sam. He does listen live usually. But I don't have my phone, so I can't text back. All right, back to you, Paul. Which sold better in 1976, the Chevrolet Monte Carlo or the Ford Granada? Granada also new.
I'll go with a Ford.
The Granada's new cars, especially back then, didn't always sell the first year so well. Let's go with the Chevy, with the Monte Carlo.
The Granada sold a stunning 450,000 units.
Man, my logic is just not working today.
And the Monte Carlo was a hot seller, and I think it was next year.
But I was going to say, it didn't sell till later, not in 76.
Monte Carlo is kind of one of my favorite cars in terms of marketing readjustment because it came out in 70 and was really a muscle car.
Yeah.
You can get a 396 and a 454 crammed 454, crammed under the hood of that thing. And then they just adjusted so quick when the muscle car ended.
Because of all the gas issues.
Low lead gas, insurance issues.
Is that
all
one
sorts
of the years of the gas shortages, 76?
73 was the first embargo, and then 79, I believe, was the second embargo. But people were reeling. I mean, people thought about fuel economy for a long time after that first embargo. All right. Where were we on that? You guys both got that.
No, you got it wrong.
Okay.
Paul got it correct.
Do you have four?
I think so.
He's kicking my butt.
All right. You're heading for a perfect score.
Okay.
All right. Back to Tim here. Which sold better, the Chevrolet Chevette or the Dodge Aspen?
I'm going to have to say the Chevette.
Considering I'd never even heard of the Dodge Aspen, I would go with a Chevette as well.
It was just a Volare with different badges.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. And if you were really lucky, you had a 318 V8.
Okay.
Otherwise, you were just not lucky.
When I think of Dodge Aspen, I think
I'll do the Chevette as well.
It was the Chevette. Okay. This was a slow year for the Chevette, but I think it's one of its first years. 275,000 units. That got, I think, close to 400 at some point.
I was thinking of the Chrysler Aspen that was short-lived around 2008 or 2009.
I drove one of those to the Detroit Auto Show. That was just
it was a rental fleet type car. Yeah, but I don't remember the 76 Aspen at all.
Nor do I. I don't remember that vehicle existing either.
You're missing nothing.
Okay.
Not a bright spot. So you both got that one right, but you have a perfect score, Paul.
Thank you.
And Tim, you have two. We're going to the bonus question, which is
always related to the topic of the day.
Always related to that. And this would go to you first, right? Okay. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Paul, the pickle market in the U.S. is an astonishing $3.5 to $5 billion annually. The average American consumes 9 pounds of pickles every year. That seems like a lot of pickles.
Well, if you're Polish.
Maybe. Yeah. You wouldn't want to try and do that in a week. Anyway, according to Grok, so this may not be right.
Okay.
Which of the following is the best-selling brand of pickle relish? Are you ready?
Okay.
Mount Olive, Vlasic, Heinz, or Clausen?
What was the second one? Vlasic?
Vlasic.
I'll go with that.
Which is really weirdly spelled. I don't know if I knew that. I've been looking at the jar all my life, but... Tim, pickles.
I'm an avowed pickle hater, so this is going to be tough.
Really?
Going to be tough, yes. Do not like pickles.
How does that affect you and your relationship with a Chicago hot dog?
I don't do Chicago hot dogs.
That now I understand the relationship.
You
know,
and you don't invite this guy back.
No. I'll eat a regular hot dog without ketchup, or you know what? I'm from the suburbs. It's fine. I'll eat some ketchup. It's fine. But I don't do pickles. I don't do the relish. I don't do the whole thing.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
I go Italian beef as opposed to hot dogs.
Speaking of Italian beef, Portillo's does an unbelievably good veggie hot dog. don't know if people, you guys know vegetarian.
Dog.
Yeah, their garden dog.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say the only thing wrong with it is that they cheat on the pickles or the tomatoes. Tomatoes are supposed to be like an eighth wedge. Like it should be a substantial thing. And they use like slices, really thin, paper thin slices. But other than that, pretty great.
Interesting. Yeah, so to answer the question, I've heard of three of the four brands. The first one I never heard of before.
Mount Olive?
Yeah. Vlasic is always, I always hear that one talked about as a really good one. Heinz, probably most brand name recognition because of all the other condiments they sell. And then the, what was the last one? I'm sorry.
Clausen.
Clausen. Clausen sounds
they used to advertise
pretty familiar.
A lot.
I'm going
to
go with Heinz just because it's probably cheapest at the grocery store.
Yeah, you're both wrong. It's actually Mount Olive.
Never even heard of
the
it.
The one brand I never heard of.
Well, I checked into it because I thought that seemed odd. I'm aware of Mount Olive.
Okay.
But apparently they're super popular in the Southeast.
Oh, okay.
So all these brands are kind of regional.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Who knew?
All right. Sorry. Nice job, Paul.
Thank you.
Signing this for
Good
you.
Good job, Paul.
First quiz win of the year for anybody. There you go. Great. You can have that framed.
Okay.
And then you have a list for us.
Yes.
A sad list.
It's a very sad list.
It's Am I allowed to chime in on this, too?
Our sincere condolences to the following 2025 vehicles that we won't see in 2026. We start with the Acura TLX.
I forgot
that's
about
that. That's a bummer. I'm bummed about that one.
So now Acura only has the Integra as their
That's the only car.
Yes.
The TLX was a great car.
Yeah.
But there's no market for it.
Yeah. When it came out with the Type S, I was really looking forward to it. Unfortunately, underpowered. As much as it, I think it had 300 horsepower.
So right around there, yeah.
It felt a little heavy, if I remember correctly.
It was a heavy car, and the competition was like well into the fours, so it just couldn't keep up. Okay, the Audi A4.
That's a bummer.
That's a weird one, and Audi admits that this has to do with tariffs.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, they're actually replacing it with the A5.
A5, which will now only be a four-door, when before it was only a two-door. Or no, you can get it a four-door as well.
Yeah, that was called the Sportback.
Yeah, the Sportback, yeah.
What was the Sportback is now the only A5.
Exactly.
And if you don't follow this, don't worry about it. No one does.
Yeah.
This goes back to the conversation of alphanumerics being confusing.
The yes. Q8 e-tron by Audi is gone as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Going over to BMW, the X4, which is basically just a coupe version of the X3, just didn't sell that well. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because they were the first to do the coupe crossover.
Yeah, with the S6.
With the X6.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like. I think
it was
cool.
When I came out, I was like, wow, that is a great looking SUV.
But, the X6?
Yeah, the original when it first came out, I loved that one.
That was always a weird one.
Yeah, it was a little weird, but it was just cool looking.
Also, why people are paying $5,000 to $10,000 more?
For less room.
For less room.
Yeah, because it looks cool. Cadillac XT4, XT6.
I don't know if I knew the XT6 as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Vistiq EV replaces it, which is very odd.
The only gas cars they have left are cars and the Escalade.
XT5 is the only gas.
Oh, XT5 is still there.
Yes.
Oh, so that's the midsize two-row crossover.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
But the three-row XT6 is gone and the small XT4 is gone.
I don't know if I knew about the XT6. Interesting.
Do you know about this one? The Chevy Malibu. Gone.
Wasn't that gone for like, hasn't been gone for 2 years? And they're just trying to sell the last ones off the
assembly line? Yeah, well.
That's been my joke about that vehicle.
There was a 2025, so officially they sold a 2025. So
that's so weird. They had to go into a fleet.
Yeah.
Dealers weren't stocking
Almost
them
certainly.
Anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Infiniti XQ50/55, which is a coupe version of it. So.
And those are built at that Mexico plant that the...
Yeah. So they're going to focus all on the QX60 now.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a small thing coming down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
No surprise here, the Jeep Wagoneer. The Grand Wagoneer lives, but the Wagoneer dies.
That was so confusing.
I don't even know the differences.
Yeah.
I think the engine.
We never did.
Yeah.
It was maybe the chrome around the windows.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only thing you could visually
This was a
see.
Good move for them. It simplifies things.
Yeah. We talked about the Karma, Rivero.
Oh, your list is very detailed,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, that's gone. This surprised me, the Kia Soul. Gone.
This we covered a few months ago, and I talked to Kia, and I don't know if it wasn't selling well or.
According to Kia, it's because
I can't remember what they told us.
They geared it towards youth, but believe it or not, they were selling it to very old people.
This happened with the Scion XB.
And the Honda Element as well.
Yeah, they wanted kids to buy it, but ultimately guys with bad hips and their wives.
Yeah, like in their 60s and up.
Could trundle into these things easily.
This was a little confusing because it will come back, the Kia Telluride. It's gone for 26, but it will come back as a 27.
I keep forgetting this.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. Yes, that's...
And it's all new for 27. Big
reason. It's all new. Yeah. This is a very sad day for car enthusiasts. The Lexus RC.
Oh, yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Oh. So especially the V8.
Do you know what's cool about the RC? As a fat guy, I couldn't get into the IS.
Okay.
The small sedan, but the coupe's got huge doors.
Yeah, the coupe.
I love the RC.
Yeah.
Well, it made me feel young and svelte.
Better find a 25 and get it.
That was a good car.
Mercedes-Benz EQB.
Oh.
No loss there.
I can't even picture that car in my head.
Okay, the Nissan Kicks Play version, which was weird. It's the first generation Nissan Kicks that stuck around while they were selling the second generation. And
so
you would
weird.
Think it would be like thousands less because it's the last generation, but it was not that much cheaper.
No. I wrote about this recently. It was like $500 cheaper. So why?
Yeah.
You're giving up a lot.
Yeah.
The replacement vehicle was so much
better. Yeah, the second generation
just a
so
better
much
vehicle.
Better. Yeah. The Nissan Versa, and that's just because it was a subcompact sedan.
That's on again, off again.
Okay.
I don't know if it's dead for sure. But I heard it was too.
Yeah.
And then someone told me they're still building them, but I don't know what they're building. Are they 2026?
Maybe they're building them as 25s.
They might be. A build out and they'll be on dealer lots during the year.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Could be. Polestar 2. And that's the tariffs kill that because it comes from China. So.
Yeah. That story's crazy.
Yeah.
Because the Polestar 3, now built in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And the Polestar 4 is built by Renault in an old Samsung plant in South Korea.
Yeah, yes.
Oh my God!
It's a world market out there. This is going to kill the enthusiasts. The Porsche 718.
Oh,
the Boxster Cayman Coupe.
They're finally gone.
Yeah, it's becoming an EV, and then it will return as a gas in 28.
Oh, we have time for one more.
Okay, Subaru Legacy, Toyota BZ4X,
right?
Volkswagen ID. Buzz. We talked about Volvo S60 and Volvo S90.
That's it then. No. Oh, but the V's are still there. The wagons are still there. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Show for the year. Big thanks to Paul Harrell for sitting in for Jill. Thank you, Tim Healy of The Truth About Cars. Thank you to producer. forgive me. But thank you to Professor Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again
next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.